Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com. Hey there! It's Gary Parrish. It's Monday, May 16th, 2022. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting dodo birds. And Leaky Black Cow Boone is here with me. If you're watching live on YouTube, please smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent, and if you follow the sport at all, you might know that nothing really too notable in college basketball has happened in the past few days. But the NBA draft lottery is Tuesday night. With that in mind, I wanted to connect with Strong Jaw and start by asking him a simple question. Here's the question. As it pertains to which player is going to get picked number one overall in the 2022 NBA draft, does it matter which franchise wins the lottery on Tuesday night? Because sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. Like in 2003, I don't think it would have mattered who was picking first. They were taking LeBron James. 2012, it would not have mattered who was picking first. They're taking Anthony Davis. 2015, I don't think it matters who's picking first. Probably taking Karl Anthony Towns. 2019, benefit of hindsight, perhaps it should have mattered, but I don't think it mattered who won the lottery. They were taking Zion Williamson. So right now, there seems to be at least three, maybe four players who you can find at the top of somebody's big board or mock draft. Tell me, Strong Jaw, does it matter which team wins the lottery as it pertains to which player is going to be picked first?
Yeah. Good morning, GP, and happy Monday. I do believe it matters this year more so than most. We have, you know, really for several months now in this draft, there has been a clear top four in this draft. But to this point, there has been no clear number one. We've got Chet Holmgren, Jabari Smith, Paolo Banchero, and Jaden Ivey, who I think in some order, and maybe in that order, will end up going number one in this draft. But, you know, I like Jaden Ivey. I think we'll end up going number four. Out of those four, I have him number one on the big board. And I've heard that there are teams, or at least one team, who has Jaden Ivey at number one on their big board. So I think it's going to matter who gets the number one pick, if only because team fit, more so than I think in recent years, is going to dictate who ends up going number one in this draft. I have a mock draft coming out on Monday, kind of a prelude to the draft lottery on Tuesday. And I wrote a little bit about this, and I know you mentioned it in your last mock draft as well, but to me, it does feel like over the next month, we may draw closer to a more definitive look at how this draft goes. And I do think that over the next 30 days or so, Chet Holmgren may end up emerging as, okay, you know, we've been thinking about this class as a clear top four, but no clear number one. Chet Holmgren, to me, I think of the four, has the most likely chance to emerge as the guy who is not maybe consensus, but pretty darn close to consensus number one pick. He's 7 foot tall. He's 195 pounds. He's an elite defensive prospect. And we saw even at Gonzaga last season, the flashes that he showed on offense, I think, are going to translate. So if you are 7 foot tall and you have guard skills in the way that Chet Holmgren has guard skills, like we don't really see players like that. I think there's going to be concerns about maybe how he'll hold up physically. And we don't see players who are 7 foot, 195 pounds very often have long NBA careers. But I think we both agree on this, the thinking that you have as a team picking at number one, you want to take the biggest swing. And Chet Holmgren, I think, to me, represents the biggest swing. That's why I think we'll end up getting closer to Chet being considered, if not a lock, close to a lock to go number one. But there is a clear top four in this draft, and I think at this point you could kind of throw them in any order and it wouldn't totally surprise me.
So that clear top four is Gonzaga's Chet Holmgren, Duke's Paolo Banchero, Auburn's Jabari Smith, and Purdue's Jaden Ivey. And I agree with you. Depending on the day, I could make the case for any of them being drafted ahead or below any of the other. I do think those four should be the top four, although I would listen to arguments for Keegan Murray cracking into that just because I think he's got some stuff that is so easily translatable. Sometimes you watch prospects and it's like, okay, how is that going to translate to the NBA? I don't have any questions about how a lot of the stuff Keegan Murray does is going to translate to the NBA. So I'd listen to arguments for him cracking the top four. But outside of that, I think those are pretty clearly the top four. I agree with you. That seems like a high number to be considered for number one. Like I remember in the Anthony Edwards draft, at the end of the day, and I know they didn't go in this order 1-2, but at the end of the day, I think most people were either Anthony Edwards or LaMelo Ball. I don't think many people were interested in taking James Wiseman, number one. I know he went in between them, but at the end, that was probably between Anthony Edwards and LaMelo Ball. You could have a real debate about those guys. They both look terrific so far. Even if you were redoing that draft, you might go LaMelo 1, Edwards 2, but Anthony Edwards has been fabulous. You know, to be considering four is an unusually high number at number one. So let me ask you this. Is that because these are four awesome prospects, or is it because there's no sure thing at the top of this, the way there seems to be normally?
I think it's because there's four really good, but maybe not great prospects.
Right.
I think, you know, again, we could go back to in a few years from now, I think we could say like, okay, Chet Holmgren should have easily been number one, and he's an all-star. Clearly, he was a star and a kind of an outlier in this class where we thought there was four guys. But to this point, it really does feel like this is a strong class, but maybe not as strong as, you know, going back to the Zion and Jaw draft or the LaMelo and Anthony Edwards draft. Like, I think more often or more likely this class is just going to be considered like really good at the top, but maybe no clear superstars at the top, which is I think going to obviously make an impact on how the top four ends up shaking out. Even in a few years, I wouldn't be surprised if like AJ Griffin, we're talking about him as maybe a guy who should have snuck in as someone in this elite top tier, or even Shaedon Sharpe, who was a former number one recruit in his own class. He played 0 minutes at Kentucky last season, has already declared and has left the door open to potentially returning to Kentucky, although I don't think anyone expects that he will. There's a lot of potential home run swings at the top. Like if you're a team picking in the top four, top five, I think you have to be really excited about the potential of all of these guys. But I'm not entirely sure that there's a sure thing at the top of this draft, and certainly not multiple sure things, at least from a confidence standpoint. I'd be really excited about getting some of these top four, top five guys. But definitely I think the top of this draft is a little bit weaker than what we've seen in previous years.
Right. I could see any of them developing into stars. I wouldn't bet my 401k that any one of them develops into an undeniable star. My latest mock draft has Chet Holmgren at the top. And you'll like you said, you like Jaden Ivey at the top. It's totally reasonable. Paolo at the top, reasonable. Jabari Smith at the top, reasonable. The reason I went with Holmgren, and I'm not comparing these players at all because they're nothing alike. I'm just comparing this very specific point. Chet Holmgren literally did unprecedented things in college basketball this year. Like you would have every 2 weeks, it felt like, you could go to ESPN Stats and Info, and it'd be like, and Chet Holmgren became the first player to ever do boom, 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 boom. Chet Holmgren just became the first player in 25 years to do boom, 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 boom. The only two players in the past 40 years to do this thing are Chet Holmgren and so-and-so. Chet Holmgren just became the first freshman to do this thing since this thing started being recorded as an official stat in 1967. There's just like every few weeks there was one of those things. He was doing things that people his age had either rarely done in college basketball or never done in college basketball. And what that reminds me of is when Luka Doncic was playing in Europe, and it was like no European player his age has ever done this, 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 and this. No European player his age has ever done this, 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 and that. And it was just a lot of unprecedented, undeniable stuff. A lot of people had played at his age in this league, and they had never done the things he was doing. And yet when people watched him, they had questions. Mm-hmm. And the questions were about his body, about his athleticism, about his quickness. You know, what's he gonna, you know, okay, sure, he's dominating these guys at this age, and that's awesome, but you know, what's going to happen when he's playing against NBA athletes? What's going to happen when he's playing, when he's being guarded by 6'6 NBA level athletes with long wingspans and incredible feet? Well, you've been watching. Let me tell you what happens. He cooks them over and over again. Basically, since the moment he's been in the NBA, he's been doing all of the things that he was able to do in Europe. He just moved to a different continent and started cooking guys the same way he was cooking guys over there. And if it's possible to learn something from previous drafts, and I hope that it is, it's that from that one, folks got so caught up on what they imagined he might not be able to do and stopped focusing as much as they should have been focusing on the things he was so clearly doing. Yeah. And I think there's some of that going on with Chet Holmgren. He's thin. I got it. I don't know that he'll ever be a bodybuilder. I don't know that he'll ever win a weightlifting competition. I don't know that you'll ever look at him and say he's anything other than a skinny guy. But he does so many things at an elite level. You know, he's an incredibly unique prospect. And I'm wondering, not guaranteeing, just wondering if people have questions about his body and his strength and how all that's going to work at the next level. Because you hear this all the time. How's he going to guard Joel Embiid? Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, always drives me crazy with prospects. Let me, a little aside real quick. You know, for years, you know, you'd be looking at, you know, two guard prospects, and somebody would say, okay, but like, how's he going to guard Kobe? Well, he's not going to guard Kobe. Nobody guards Kobe. Kobe probably put 35 on him, right? And it's like, how's Chet Holmgren ever going to guard Joel Embiid? How does anybody guard Joel Embiid? They don't.
You don't.
So yeah. So I get it, but I think sometimes taking prospects and then asking the question, how are they going to guard this person who plays the same position, who is like the best in the world at that position? Like, they're not going to guard them. Like when James Harden was in his prime, which seems like something in the past now. How's he going to guard James Harden? He probably won't. He'll probably guard him the same way everybody else does. And I know there's a difference between guys who can't guard James Harden in his prime, or Joel Embiid right now, and or Kobe in his prime, and like bad defenders. Like, I got that. But I don't get caught up on that too much. Like, if he goes to the West, he'll play Joel Embiid twice a year. It'll be fine. I just wonder if people get so caught up on the body that they don't pay close enough attention to the other stuff. And then he gets into the NBA as the second pick or the third pick. And I don't really think it goes any lower than that. But the people who have questions about him, they go, oh, geez, he's doing all the stuff that I've watched him do in high school. He's doing all the stuff that I watched him do in college. Why did I not think he would be able to do all of this stuff in the NBA? Again, not guaranteeing that, because I have questions about all these guys. But the reason I would lean toward him is because I'm more interested in focusing on the unbelievable stuff he does than I am focusing on his, slight frame.
Yeah, and I think that's the right way to approach at least scouting with Chet, because there are some definite questions. I love the comparison with Luka's, because I think we both had him number one on our boards going into that draft. And I feel like there were more legitimate questions about Luka than there are with Chet. I was real concerned about, okay, what he's doing in Europe is fantastic, but can the speed translate? Is he able to get like a quick first step? And those concerns with Luka, I think, were pretty real. Turns out they didn't matter, obviously, right? But with Chet, I'm more confident that some of the skills that he has is going to translate. Like, is he going to be able to guard Giannis? No, but probably no one's going to be able to guard Giannis, right? Like, so yeah, against bigger bigs in the NBA, I would imagine the physicality is going to be challenging for him. But in terms of his competitive nature, what we've seen from him at the college level, you can't really muscle and push around Chet Holmgren. Like, he had some games where he struggled against physicality, but I don't think it's a theme. Like, I don't think that's going to be a problem for the rest of his career. And what we saw from him throughout the entire season with Gonzaga was an elite shot blocker, a guy who, if there was a stat recording shots altered around the rim or just straight up scaring dudes around the paint, he would have probably led the statistical category in that. So that is absolutely going to translate. I feel very, very confident in that. And then if you get anything else on offense from him outside of just being a lob threat, a guy who can shoot above the break threes or even create a little bit, then I think it's all gravy. So you're talking about maybe the difference between a really good starter and maybe an all-star. But if you're picking number one, like, so long as he's healthy, and obviously that's a question for anyone in the draft, so long as they can stay healthy, then there's really not a bad option. And I think that's kind of the qualm, the argument with Chet is, what are you getting? Like, I feel pretty confident Chet is going to be a very competent, if not star, NBA player.
Do you agree, if Chet Holmgren's got the highest ceiling, and I think we're on the same page there, Paolo Banchero is the safest of the pick. Would you agree with, like, there's just no way he's not a really good NBA player for a long time, again, if he stays healthy. You can question what his ceiling is, I guess, but I can't imagine Paolo Banchero being anything other than a really good, at worst, a really good NBA player.
Yeah, of the four, he's clearly, I think, the most polished. That's the word I always throw around with Paolo, because he's a guy who I think you could plug in right away, and he's putting up 20 points per game on an NBA team. Just his offensive polish, the way he's able to not only create his own shot in the mid-range, but, like, he grew up as a guard. Like, he has some real passing and some playmaking that we saw quite a bit at Duke. Like, he was clearly, I think, Duke's best passer at 6'10". Like, that is a rare skill to have. And on offense in this NBA, I think that's super valuable. So I feel the most confident that he's going to be a very productive NBA player. I'm not as confident that he would be like the superstar of the bunch, but definitely I think one of the safest guys, clearly why he's probably going to go in the top three. And I would probably make a small case for Jaden Ivey if we're talking in terms of like total ceiling. Chet and Jaden Ivey, I think, are, to me, on that same plane. But in terms of safeness and how they project to the NBA level, Paolo, I would agree with you, has the most polish of these top prospects.
How concerning, if at all, again, talking about the top shelf prospects in the 2022 NBA draft, how concerning, if at all, is it that, though Jabari Smith was awesome, and I believe is in the betting markets the favorite to be the number one overall pick in the draft, yep, how concerning is it that, for the most part, in his 1 year of college, they couldn't just throw it to him and tell him to go take over games and make plays? Like, they really didn't do that too much. It was the guards who were trying to win games at the end. You would think, you know, in a vacuum, if you've got the probable number one overall pick, you could just give him the ball and say, hey, go take over this thing. But he really wasn't equipped to do that in his 1 year of college. Does that bother you?
That does not personally bother me. I'm more bothered by what he did against Miami in the NCAA tournament, where he had 10 points, played 35 minutes, and was really, really ineffective. He was 3 of 16 shooting in that game. For a guy who, you know, his kind of calling card at 6'10" is becoming an elite shooter at the NBA level. Like, if Miami's defense is going to do that to you, like, yes, it's a one-off, but that was a huge stakes game in the NCAA tournament. Auburn needed him to step up and make shots, and he was not able to deliver. Walker Kessler also really struggled in that game. In terms of creating, like, that's just not Jabari Smith's game. He's not going to be the guy who's going to go out and create shots for you when the game is on the line. That is not what he did in college. Bruce Pearl never really asked him to do that at Auburn. I don't think that's going to be his role in the NBA. But in the NBA, I think he's going to be a really good defender. He's got great size. He's an excellent shooter. And when you're a dead-eye three-point shooter at 6'10", that is a mismatch nightmare. You're always going to be able to have a role in an NBA. And at the power forward spot. Like I think that is his case for why he should clearly be considered as one of the top guys in this draft. For some of those reasons, among them being that I don't think he's a creator, I would not take him with my top pick. But the betting markets, as you said, they have him as the projected number one pick. This is pre-lottery, obviously, and we'll see how this unfolds. But yeah, I think that is very, very, very interesting that given some of the holes in his game and the fact that he is not a creator, he is still the favorite. I think what we saw from Jabari Smith as a freshman at Auburn this season, he was able to develop. And I think in terms of some of these top guys, he showed the most promise developmentally of any of the players that I saw. He went from like, oh wow, this guy's like a lottery pick to, oh wow, this could be the number one pick in the draft. We saw some playmaking that he was able to create his own shot off the dribble, some passing skills. Like, again, he's not going to be a primary creator. I don't even think he's going to be a secondary initiator in the NBA. But if you can add even a little bit of playmaking, a little bit of shot making on top of what he already brings to the table, then, yeah, we're talking about a guy who's going to go top five in the draft.
So people who don't follow it too closely might not realize, you know, which franchises are actually I don't want to say the favorites, because nobody, that's the thing that gets lost. People say, you know, Houston's the favorite to get the overall first over. No, they're not. Like, they have a 14% chance. Nobody's the favorite. There are teams that have a better chances than others, or more chances than others, but nobody's the favorite. Even if you are Houston, Orlando, Detroit, which have a 14% chance to get the number one overall pick. You know, it means you've got 86% chance to not get the number one pick. Yep. So nobody's the favorite, but Houston, Orlando, Detroit each have a 14% chance, followed by Oklahoma City at 12.5%, then Indiana 10.5%, Portland 9%, Sacramento 7.5%. And again, the NBA draft lottery is Tuesday night, and I will be updating my mock draft just as soon as I can get to it, following the announcement of how the ping pong balls landed. So the Iowa State Bonnies are taking shape in Ames. TJ Osterberger has added two St. Bonaventure players from the transfer portal. We're going to get into that next, but first, a word from our sponsors.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third-row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
So the Iowa State Bonnies are coming to Ames, Iowa. TJ Osterberger has added a couple of St. Bonaventure players via the transfer portal. Jaron Holmes, a shooting guard who averaged 13.5 points, 5 rebounds, 3.6 assists this past season. He's headed to Iowa State. And Oshun Oshunier, who is a 2-time Atlantic 10 Defensive Player of the Year, really good player, 11.3 points, 7.5 rebounds, 2.9 blocks per game this past season. Both have committed to Iowa State. So this is interesting. Iowa State fans, some, were really upset. They thought it was the end of college basketball as we know it a few weeks back when Tyrese Hunter entered the transfer portal. And we talked about it here on the podcast. One of the things I tried to explain is that this is just going to be the way it is with the one-time transfer waiver, and you're going to lose some to that you want to keep, and you're going to get some that other people wanted to keep, or it'll all work itself out. you might lose your best player or best returning player to a situation that that player deems better or preferable, but you're going to be able to pull from other places. And if we want to start to creating tiers of college basketball, perhaps there's the blue blood tier, and then there's like the other power conference schools tier. So we'll throw Iowa State in there. And then there's everything below it, which, with all due respect, might be the St. Bonaventure tier. Mark Schmidt, incredible job there. But, like, you know, it's a hard job. It's a difficult job in a league outside of the traditional power structure. So Iowa State loses a player I'm sure it wanted to keep on some level to the transfer portal. But as predicted, T.J. Osberger is doing just fine reloading. And this is just going to be the way the sport works. And, you know, I bet you even the Iowa State fans who thought the transfer portal, the one-time transfer waiver, were the worst thing in the history of college athletics a few weeks ago, I bet they're not feeling so bad about it right now.
Yeah, they've got to be feeling pretty good. This is Oshunye is a huge addition. Jaren Holmes, I think, is going to be a difference maker. He's a fantastic shot maker. But Oshunye, to me, fits a need for Iowa State. 6'10", I think one of the best shot blockers in all of college basketball. And averaged 2.9 blocks per game each of the last two seasons, two-time A-10 Defensive Player of the Year. He was top 15 last season in block rate at 12.1%. Just for reference, Chet Holmgren, who we've been talking about as potential number one pick, was 12.6% in block rate last season. So that ranked 10th in the country. So in terms of what he's going to bring to the table for Iowa State, he brings shot blocking. That's really what Iowa State lacked last season. And guess what? Iowa State was really good on defense last season, despite not having that. They were top five, according to KenPom's efficiency metrics. So adding him, I think, is going to be a huge difference. Obviously, Iowa State set to lose Tyrese Hunter, going to lose Isaiah Brockington, but they're bringing in Oshunye, Jaren Holmes. They're also adding a transfer from Temple and Jeremiah Williams and VCU forward Hassan Ward. They're also enrolling three top 200 high school recruits, and Gabe Kauscher is expected to come back. So,
and Trey King as well. Yep. He transferred from Georgetown, I think, during the season, and he'll be eligible. So right. it'll be a new cast of characters, but this is I think Iowa State. This is the main reason I wanted to bring this up. This is not about Iowa State. It's just that the Iowa State situation, the way this offseason is unfolded, is a pretty good reflection of the state of college basketball. Like, you're gonna lose a player that you probably wanted to keep, and then it's your job as a basketball coach to go out and try to replace those players by getting guys that I'm sure other schools wanted to keep. And, you know, and TJ has done a really good job at that. Like, given what he did after getting the Iowa State job last offseason, how quickly he used the transfer portal to take Iowa State from a two-win program to an NCAA tournament program, that should have suggested to everybody, like, this guy is going to be able to operate in this space and he'll be just fine. And, you know, so this shouldn't be a surprise, but still, I just think the roller coaster ride Iowa State fans have been on this offseason is a pretty good reflection of what it's going to be like for a lot of basketball programs. There's going to be a day where you curse the transfer portal because you just lost somebody you want to keep. And then there's going to be another day where you're like, woohoo, I love this transfer portal. We just got a two-time A-10 Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And this is kind of reflective of the college basketball landscape writ large right now, where you're going to lose players, but programs are adding from the transfer portal at such a rate now that you can lose players, you can lose stars, and you can still get back really quality players. Like Iowa State, they may take a slight step back losing Tyrese Hunter. But I do think they're going to be able to replace at least some of this production, and the talent that they're adding elsewhere on top of who they're bringing back. Maybe they don't take a step back next year.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Hand A, I give you Tyrese Hunter. Hand B, I give you Jaren Holmes and Oshunye. Which hand you want? Is it clear?
What you got in your feet?
I can't show you my feet. That'll get too weird.
Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. Shoot, I think I'd rather have Tyrese Hunter, but
yeah, probably. But yeah. Probably. But it's not like obvious. I'm just saying.
No,
like,
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, like you know, you probably got two players, neither of whom are as gifted as Tyrese Hunter, but you got two really good players. You know, that have come in since you lost Tyrese Hunter, and you're fine. You're fine. I don't know where Iowa State will be. You know, at this point in the season or year, I sort of look at top 25 and one candidates, and I don't really look much past that right now. So every once in a while, you end up in a situation and somebody will be like, so how do you think Penn State's going to do? Well, I've got to take a closer look at that because you're either on my top 25 and one radar or you're not on my radar. And so I don't have Iowa State as a top 25 and one contender. But you start looking at how the roster's taking shape, and they've got some good pieces. And I won't be surprised if TJ's got them in a position to maybe go to back-to-back NCAA tournaments.
Yeah. The Big 12 should be slightly up for grabs next season. I think Baylor's probably the front runner. KU's right there.
Baylor, Rainy, Kansas.
Yeah.
Texas.
TCU might be in the mix, given how they finished the season.
Sure. Like in the top 25 and one right now. Yeah. I've got Baylor at 7, Kansas at 8. So I guess that suggests I would make Baylor the very slight favorite. I've got TCU at 14, Texas at 16. So that's four Big 12 teams in the top 16. And then I've got – I still get caught on these every once in a while. I almost was going to throw Texas A&M in there. That's an SEC school. So that's it. I've got four Big 12 teams in the top 25 and one, and they are Baylor, Kansas, TCU, and Texas. I guess Texas Tech is right there, you know, just on the outside somewhere.
Yeah.
You could reasonably have Texas Tech in there. But yeah, the league probably up for grabs. Although it's always weird to call the Big 12 up for grabs, given that Kansas wins it like, you know, just about every single year. Yeah, you know, Baylor, Kansas, TCU, Texas. I guess I could see any of those four winning the league.
And you have Kansas bringing back projected Jalen Wilson probably coming back, right? And Brown maybe gone.
That's right. I have Christian Brown gone. I have Jalen Wilson back. And, you know, Jalen Wilson, I don't think got an invite to the combine.
Right.
That's I'm all for anybody going through the process. But if they tell you we don't want you to come to the combine, that's a pretty good indication. There's probably not a place for you in this NBA draft unless you are just dead tired of school and ready to be done with it. You might be wise to go back, particularly to a place like Kansas where name, image, and likeness rights are, I'm assuming, are going to be available to you.
Yeah, especially just coming off the national championship. I think Matt Norlander wrote a piece about that here recently. Pretty interesting. I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities for those players, and especially for Christian Brown. Like, I think we've talked about this before, but that's a real interesting decision. Fringe first rounder. Does he stay? Does he go? I think he can make some real money if he comes back to Kansas, but if you're first rounder, do you pass that up? All those guys have pretty tough decisions. Either way, I think Kansas can be in a good spot next season.
All right, let's get out of here. But not before, am I right? PGA Championship's coming to you this week, huh?
Got my PGA shirt on.
Look at you. We didn't plan that.
That's right. Huge week for Tulsa and Southern Hills. I could see Kyle Porter this week for the first time in like 2 years. Kyle Porter, a part-time mainstay on this podcast. Very excited about it. Huge week for Tulsa. Huge week for Coney Island. Out of town visitors. So very excited to see a lot of people that I don't normally see.
So are you going as a fan or actually going to write from the tournament?
I'm going to be writing from the tournament. So this should be an interesting week because we've got the draft lottery on Tuesday, the combine the rest of the week. I'll be doing a little bit of both, but I'll be at the PGA Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Yeah. All those days. Saturday, I'm going as a fan with my dad. The other days I'll be writing. So I get to see Tiger in person, which will be pretty exciting. And I'm super pumped. This should be a fantastic week.
I love major golf. I love different. Major Tibbet. Yeah, I love it. Like I can't get enough of it. And so it's cool when big sporting events, because like Tulsa is it's a beautiful town, but it's like, you know, it's not New York, LA. So when, you know, this, when the sports world, like, sort of, and I know we're in the middle of the NBA playoffs, but like, you know, a big massive sports events come to like it you know, it registers differently than if you know, the major championship was in LA, like the US Open, I think, is at LA Country Club next year. Well, like that'll mm-hmm. just be on a list of a million awesome big things that are in Los Angeles. But like, yeah. Tulsa doesn't get this kind of stuff all the time. So it must be a huge week for the city.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. And I think there's a marathon going on the same week as well. So it's a huge week for Tulsa. I talked to the Southern Hills PGA director out there, and they had Tiger obviously come out and fly out for his practice round just a couple weeks ago, and kind of asked him how that was, and he's like, and it's just like Tiger buzz hits different, and so I think they've all been kind of crossing their fingers that he would show up and play. Looks like he's gonna play. Obviously Phil has already withdrawn, the reigning PGA champion, but the buzz is beginning to build. It's feeling very real. I'm very excited about this one for sure.
Awesome. Well, have a good time out there. I look forward to reading your work. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Huck Larnell. Thank you guys once again for listening to the Eye on College Basketball Podcast. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. 5 stars. Nice review. There's more of us than there are of them. If you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel yet, please knock that out. Just go into the search engine, type Eye on College Basketball. It'll pop right up. Subscribe, hit the bell button so you get alerts when a new video drops. I thank you in advance, and I'll talk to you again a little later on this week. Till then, take care.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.